pop right into there.
Okay. I'm very glad that I live to see the march. What year is it? 1988. It seems a beautiful thing. I never knew, being 85, that I lived to see it. And I'm thrilled. And I thank God for all the people who took part in it, and that they may also live to be a couple of hundred like me.
Okay, honey, that's one. See if it's going. See that arrow? That arrow moves. That means it's picking up good, clear sound.
Yeah.
So if you talk a little low, you'll see it'll stay on one side. You want to try to keep your voice a little loud.
Okay.
All right? I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Could you talk a little bit about Lillian and who she was and what your relationship with her was like?
Yes, I can. I met her in 1932, and we've been together 40 years before she passed away in 1979. And we had a lovely time together. We went places. We did a little bit of everything. But I wish she could have been here now. It'd been so much pleasure in having her with me, so that we could enjoy what this generation is coming to now.
We need to change a tape at this time.
Okay. That was wonderful, Mabel. Okay, you want to hold this?
Yeah, I'll hold this. I'll take glasses off of this end. Now, you talk about Mommy?
No, talk about Lillian. Go on talking about Lillian.
So we met on Lexington Avenue and 34th Street. And I liked her very much. And I decided that I'd like friendship with her. She seemed to be nice. She's a very small person. And she asked me my name. I told her my name. I asked her name. She says, Lillian. I said, yeah, don't you have a last name? She said, yes, Forster. I said, that's nice. Okay. We gets up on the in those days, 1932, it was, what do you call it?
The trolley car, maybe?
Trolley car, yeah. The trolley car. You get up on the trolley car, and the trolley car was full of people. And so she told one woman, move over, you, this space for my girlfriend.
Ooh.
And from then on, we were friends. And they went uptown, all the way uptown from Lexington 34. And we had a lovely time. Well, a couple of days later, I went to see her. And a couple of days later, about a month later, she moved in with me.
And you were together.
And then we was together till 1979.
Mabel, how do you think Lillian would have liked the gay liberation, all the things
you've
been
doing? Would have loved it, because I liked it. And she wanted people to be just what they are, not what somebody wanted them to be. And I'm the same way. Well, we stayed together, and we had so many friends, loads of friends. Meantime, I went in, I did some acting. I also took up singing from, I made some singing at the World's Fair. I was at the World's Fair and sung there. And then after that, I was Carnegie Hall, I sang. And before I met Lillian, I was at, what's that?
Coney Island?
Coney Island. And I sung there and danced. Oh, I had a ball.
How did you support yourself and Lillian later on, after that?
Well, Lillian, she used to press.
Let's keep talking, Mabel.
She used to press. She pressed, gowns for the opera once, and the gowns for the theater, all them big, beautiful gowns.
Yeah, I know, it's important for us. How did you work, Mabel?
I took care of people's children, took care of their home, and everybody seemed to like me. I'd go there to take care a little bit. When I look, I was taking care of big. So, and they all thought that I was just grand.
Mabe, I want to ask you, did you ever consider getting married, ever in your life?
No, I did not consider getting married for the simple reason I didn't see nobody that was any good to marry, and then I didn't see any way they treated, the men treated my friends and things. No, I didn't want to go that. I was too selfish. I love Mabel, and I'm still loving Mabel.
And a lot of other people love Mabel, too. So you knew your whole life you'd have to take care of yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, because I had nobody to take care of me, so I had to take care of myself.
Mabel, have you ever regretted living your life as a lesbian woman?
No.
Wait, let's wait. I'm picking out these things.
No, I've never.
Wait, honey. They're not ready yet. I want the world to hear. Yeah, look at me, honey. Don't worry about them.
Don't worry about those.
Nope.
Those are my friends.
No, I know. They don't think you're unfriendly, but it just makes it look more real.
Okay.
If they weren't here, we'd be doing the same thing, right?
Right.
We do this all the time.
Okay.
Except in my bedroom.
Okay.
All right. I was asking you.
Oh, are you asking the question? I'm doing the answer.
Right. If you have ever regretted loving women, have you ever regretted being a lesbian? Have you ever felt that you made wrong choices?
No, I never regretted it because I thought, to me, my mother took care of me. And she's a woman. And she died when I was a month old. So therefore, I think women means a whole lot in my life. And they took care of me when I worked. They were nice to me. The children was nice to me. Their husbands was nice to me, too. But that didn't make me love the men anymore. They're all right in their place. To me, I respect them.
Women. Talk about your feelings for women.
But it's the women that I prefer. So it's nothing you can do about that.
And how did you feel? Just talk a little more about marching in our Gay Pride Day yesterday.
Oh, the first time I were marched, boy, I walked from way downtown to, let's see now, way down in the village. And I walked all the way up to
Central Park
and felt fine. All the rest of the girls was getting all tired and worn out. I could still walk. And I'm sorry I can't walk now. But maybe someday I'll be walking in the spirit world along with them waving, saying, whoopee, whoopee. Mm-hmm.
How did it feel just being with all those gay people taking over the city?
Oh, they should take over the city. Not one city, all the cities. Because we are alive, we understand what it all means to each and everyone. And I hope that those that's not gay, they don't have to be gay, fall in line anyhow. See?
What do you want to say to the people who hate us, Mabel?
Well, they don't understand the situation. You cannot be mad at those people that hate us, because if they should pass into another world, they'll see that we are the ones they should love.
All right. You want to say something?
Amen.
Should we stop, or you want more?
I guess so. Ask Walter. You got enough?
Where's my girls? There they
are.
Okay.
We're having a good time over here.
All right.
Get enough? Got
it,
angles? Okay.
Now we'll continue this.
In Coney Island, I sang Buddy in Coney Island in the show. So therefore, when I met Regina, that's Joan's mother, well, I was singing it one day and she asked me to sing. So from then on, I've been singing it. And I'll sing for you now if you want me to. Nights are long since you went away. I dreamed about you all through the day. My buddy, my buddy, nobody's quite so true. I miss your voice, the touch of your hand, and I long to know that you understand, my buddy, my buddy. Your buddy misses you. That piece, I always loved it because the first woman that I ever fell in love with, before I met Lillian, she sat down and explained a lot of things to me. And then she said, I won't be here tomorrow. I'm going back to Philadelphia. And I never seen her again. Is that it?
Bob, are you rolling audio cassette? When is this?
Okay, well, we're rolling an audio
cassette. Right, well, do ours too.
You know what else? We have a transcription service in Texas.
Oh, God, do we have...
Okay, I'll give you copies of the transcripts.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. Maybe it's quite something.
Oh, boy.
I've been just going...
That's why we really important to me, gee. It's funny, you know. Well... We will make
it. Yep. Look out that. Look out, look out, because she'll have us all. This footage will be private. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the only new footage. We do have, like, the DOB women, I said, if they could just take one day out and follow Mabel around. And then it would be. When do you think this is going to be aired?
It's on the
hard, so the back fire. Oh, great.
Well,
should I sit here?
Yeah, Mabel, when you walk down the street now, everybody knows.
I've seen that wave.
Just don't mention food.
Can you show Jonah your
shadows? Jonah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, try to not do away with the three chins.
No.
Oh, that's lovely.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, yes.
It's you and your...
I like it.
It's you and your lair. No, it's beautiful. Oh, that cat. You have to.
Okay, just don't mention food in his face. If there's anything that approaches opening the can.
Yeah, it looks like that cat doesn't miss many meals.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also gets poison shots, so he's swollen.
Yeah.
Squinchy, yes.
What's that?
Denver, be quiet.
Just in the best yesterday, they had a kitten.
I don't know, I just looked up and it felt like that. Kitten?
That means you lost power at some point.
Tiny baby.
So just,
you said,
oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
How far into the tape are we?
She found it in an alley behind her office. Oh.
What's the first question?
I want to talk about
then,
you, your
in,
life, your
like
story.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to be
power.
Joan Nestle?
Oh, yeah, you, that's got to read the book. Robin, did you read my book?
I can hear my
voice.
All right, I'll give you both copies because
I call
in my book, but it's a sexually explicit book. Mm.
Well, you know, this should be a...
Yeah, no, I know, yes. I know it's in... I'm not going
to...
No, I just...
She's
a controversial book.
No, she's funny. She said something. She was saying that. She said something to Jewel. She said, oh, yeah, I ran into Joan or something. And she's like, not that I should be dropping these names. I've got a clue. I'll also tell you what else she said. She said, should I tell her this?
Is this Anna sort of blonde?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. No, it wasn't her, but there were some women who we heard talking and they said something about how, they're an item.
No one would ever guess this, including me. Our politics are about 385 worlds apart.
Really?
So,
Joan, can you please hold this counter?
I mean, her personal politics are not, but the mayor, who is not one of my favorite people, for whom
totally
she works.
Okay, good. Thank you.
She works within the system and you work without it.
But she doesn't, you know, I'm learning to respect her thing, but we are so different. But that makes, it makes it very exciting in some ways.
Mm-hmm. You tell me when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
You're rolling audio?
Just a moment. We will be.
Do I look at you or the camera?
You look at me.
Okay.
Only toward Kate.
Oh.
Right. And she's looking screen left good because everybody else has been looking screen right. Great.
That's great. I just want to be right.
This couch in the shot ends up looking like brocade or embroidery.
Or they should see it in real life.
There we are, Joan.
It's dirty cotton.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Hi. Yes.
It's okay.
That's fine. Can't let this go to your head, though.
You're talking to the couch now?
Yeah.
All right.
This couch has seen lots of stuff, let me tell you. Everything in this house has seen lots of stuff.
All right, so Wally?
Roll cassette, please. Give it a slate.
Interview with Joan Tate on the floor.
And Joan, just spell your name correctly. So.
Okay, it's N. E-S-T-L-E, but no relation to Nestle Company.
Okay, so your story.
My story. Now, my story started in the Bronx in 1940. I was born to Regina Nestle, who was a working-class Jewish woman who'd gone up to the sixth grade in school. She had allowed herself to be picked up by a man when she was 14 years old on the beach and had sex with him and had been gang raped as a result. I'll tell you why I say this. I only found this out after my mother died and her writings that she left me. Therefore, she left school, she left her family, and she went to work at age 14. My mother has written about how she always loved sex, even after that, and how she wanted, didn't know what to do with her passion. And remember, this is America, you know, New York City, and it would have been 14, it would have been around 1920, 21, 22. Anyway, my mother met my father. My mother pretended to be a virgin, so he would marry her. He was from a different class. My brother was born, and then my mother was pregnant with me in the 6th month, and my father got ill, and he died. And my mother also has left me a message in which their last moments together, this is in my book, but in which she says, Joe, my mother's, I'm named after my father, his name is Jonas, you can let go now. I'll take care of Elliot and the daughter that's to come. So I am a child of a man I never knew, a father I never met. And when I first started speaking publicly about being a lesbian in the early 70s, and I would speak, I'd be invited as, you know, in hygiene classes, I'd be between the alcoholic and the drug addict. They would have the homosexual, that was sort of the headset. We were all social deviants. And people would ask me questions about why I was the way I was, and when I would talk that I never knew my father, oh yes, that's why you're a lesbian. All those old things would come back. And I hope that sort of cordial simplicity is over. You know, there are many people who didn't have one parent. But I was raised by a tough, sexually active woman, Regina Nestle, to whom I owe pretty much all of my survival skills and really my sense of value. So, you know, I went to work when I was 13. I lived with relatives a lot. My mother would have problems holding the family together. Sometimes she worked as a whore to do it. So I've been on my own pretty much since I was 13. And I've been a lesbian since I was, well, I had same-sex relations when I was 10 years old with another young girl, and that continued into high school. And I always wanted to be a teacher. And I went through the Lower East Side days in the 60s. Oh, there's so much. I was a civil rights activist in the 60s. I was part of the march from Selma to Montgomery. I was very honored to be one of the few outsiders. They were like, to accompany the brave people of Selma who had been so brutally attacked by the police. But all of that, in the 60s, I was a civil rights activist, I was a peace advocate, but really that was all coming out of what my mother had taught me about there are the powerful and there are the powerless. There are the bosses and there are the workers. And she had always taught me to distrust power and not to be afraid to question it. And that also, I have to say, the McCarthy period, which I grew up in the tail end of it, was a supreme education to me of the courage to be different and the need to be different. And I'll just give you a little vignette how it came home to me. I was in the Bronx, this would have been around 1947, 48, and I had a social science teacher. I remember she had sort of purple hair, older women had then. And she gave us the assignment, it was Negro History Month, and she said, but you can't write about Paul Robeson. He's a traitor to America. And she would give us these called Americanisms lectures. And of course, I had to write about Paul Robeson because I'd already learned from my mother that those edicts of what couldn't be thought about and what couldn't be felt were some of the most important things. And Paul Robeson has been an influence. But I just say that. I don't think I would have had the courage to be queer if I hadn't very early on understood that ideas were used to control people, and if you were different, you really had to make your own realities in some way. So that's, and I've been teaching for the last 22 years in the SEEK program at Queen's College, which is a wonderful program for students who would not be traditionally accepted into college. It's an attempt to really open up the doors of a higher education to disenfranchised kids. And to me, it all comes together, that work and the archives work and my sexual life.
Good.
Hold it a moment.
Yeah.
I don't know how you summarize
what's
that.
What's going on? Yeah, we
have a buzz that comes up.
Is it outside?
No, I think it's internal here.
Just watch it, okay? Let's change this cable out there.
Mabel, you want to see Joan?
Oh, and they show Mabel. Mabel, can you see? That's what we look like. Can you see the television, Mabel?
Oops, let me get myself out of the way there.
It comes up in that, consistently.
Pretty shot. It is a really pretty shot.
Yeah,
my mother's name is Joni.
Did she let herself be called Joni? Or
yeah, we
Joan,
all
check
her
to
her
see
no,
that you're not
Joan.
Leaning on that that connector. Yeah, your knee might be. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we call her Joan. But
that's a big
sometimes
joke.
Sometimes we call her Joni, just to. Just a kid, just as an endearment. But nobody calls her Joan in a serious way. Sometimes we call her Big Joan. She's tiny.
They call me Big Joan too because I'm
angry or Big Joan.
It's fascinating that you've already heard that about the controversy about things. I mean,
yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit too, but let's finish.
Take this wire.
Patient.
Also, I'm running around back way so that it's not crossing over.
But I do need copies of
the
book. Yeah. I don't understand things.
Do you know Tracy Young?
Tracy Young? It's a semi-familiar name, but not in my career.
No.
Not in the video.
She,
I mean, not in my video.
No, I think she wrote a book called Many Years and Less. I know there's a show poems called that, but Women Who Love Women.
Women Who Love Women we have, but I don't think Tracy Young is the author. Is
well,
it? We have it right there.
The only reason
I
asked was because she was a babysitter.
Do you want a coffee?
Not for me, no, it's for you guys.
Yeah.
It's a little mix of decaf,
mug.
And so it won't get you all
this
crazy.
Mug here.
No?
I love some. Yeah, just milk.
Walter?
Mm-hmm.
Bob?
Crazy.
Keeps you going, huh?
I had coffee this morning.
I think I drink coffee all day, but I was next to a coffee bar.
Just listen.
So, do you hear stuff? Do you hear homophobic stuff because you pass for straight? Do you hear a lot of homophobic jokes and stuff like that?
Well,
I do. I mean, all the time.
See, I'm dressed this way now
yeah.
for a point, but usually, I mean, I can look, well, I let my hair go too, pretty dyke-y, but no, my whole point is that a butch femme couples, when you talk about, were really the front line warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They took all the oppression. There's, because together, if you see me,
yes.
like the way I am, I can pass, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm with, let's say, Lee, and she's...
You're
she,
all wearing jeans
you know,
and
she's wearing jeans. No, and I'm not.
And
I'm
Robin, we're going to roll in
that's
here
a
now.
Target for violence because she looks like she's playing the man.
Let's
you know,
start the
and on that violence
we're ready
tape,
to go,
she
Kate.
Has this incredible
right,
butch femme couple
yeah.
with a
right,
butch
start
head she's knocked out. I mean, see, two androgynous looking lesbians can pass, but
Sweet
butch femme, which...
Right, let's finish with you. So when did you come out and what was that like in your era?
All right. I would say I came out into what we call the public life of the lesbian community in 1958. And that coming out took the place of going to the first lesbian bar. And lesbian bars were incredibly important for us in that time period. They are now, too, and they happen to be less now than then. But it was in lesbian bars that we learned our culture. It was in lesbian bars. You have to really picture the courage of this. And not my courage. I'm talking about the courage of the hundreds and hundreds of young women I met. In order to go to a lesbian bar in the 1950s, you had to accept certain things. One, that you could be arrested at any time, that the police could physically violate you at any time, which they did. You had to wear three pieces of clothing of the opposite sex. Now, for me, that wasn't an issue because I was a femme, but for butch women, that meant even to go out, they had to dress with the eyes of the state on them. And that meant, for instance, they had to wear women's underpants. They had to wear, sometimes they would sew lace on their socks. Because we could be arrested for transvestism.
We could be arrested for dancing together. There's an experience I've written about that was so symbolic of what it was like. In the bars, our own bars, we were not allowed to go to the bathroom two at a time because the vice squad said the only way we had permission to gather in these only public places we had is if we went, there was no chance of sexual contact between us. So every night in these bars, every one of us had to stand on something called the bathroom line. And the bathroom line was headed by one of our own women who held the roll of toilet paper. And as we got up to her, she would wrap around her fist our allotted amount of toilet paper. And one by one, as if we were children or terribly uncontrollable people, we would be allowed into the bathroom. But on that line, we played, we cruised, we flirted, we teased. It was a politic on that line. And I always said that every time I took that allotted amount of toilet paper, I swore to battle for our liberation, but it would be liberation with a memory, because you never forget an experience of being so controlled by a larger power that even your bathroom habits were not your own. So that's, those bars were exercises in humiliation, in power. They were places we could be sexual. I think when you see now, women can dress any way they want, but in those days, for a woman to appear in the street in pants and slacks and let's say loafers, she would have been, in certain neighborhoods, beaten before she got out of the street. She would have been verbally harassed.
Okay. Because you're doing, mm-hmm. you do a good job of weaving yourself into history, mm-hmm. but let's do more you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to...
Want me to talk about what... Well, I was on that bathroom line.
Yeah.
That was...
Just how it felt. Were you afraid? Did you think... And Walter, maybe you can be a little tighter on this. I like the cat, but just a little.
Don't take it personally.
Just don't take it. Yeah. Okay.
But I was living on the Lower East Side in around 1958, or eventually in the early 60s. And when it came, I worked at a secretarial jobs. I did all the things one had to do as one was getting one's education. And I passed at work. In fact, you know what I would have to do, and many of us did, but I had to do, if I spoke to any of my lovers on the phone and I was in an office or I was selling, clerk, sales girl, I had to call my lover by the pronoun he, because I couldn't run the risk of anyone knowing that I was saying to a woman, I'll see you tonight, or what are we doing this weekend? And that change of pronoun symbolized a whole mask that I wore. But I waited for the weekend, because come Friday, my life was my own. And I would come home, I would take a bath, I would really put that other world behind me, which was a world of economic survival, until I started to teach. And I would dress for my women. I would dress for my community, which was the bar community. And I would make a sweater. I mean, this is being a sexually provocative as an 18-year-old could. And I remember the walk. I would walk across what's now St. Mark's, come across A Street, stand for a while in front of the Women's House of Detention, where I really learned a lot of lessons, because that used to be down on 6th Avenue and A Street. And a lot of poor and black and Hispanic butch women would be standing outside yelling up to their lovers, many of whom worked as prostitutes, many of whom had been picked up in street raids, yelling up to them, baby, I'll take care of the children. It just always reminded me of what could happen to any one of us at any minute. And then I would work my way to the Sea Colony, which was on Abingdon Square. And I usually be meeting friends there, but there was always that moment of pausing in front of the door and knowing that I was going to enter the world of really criminalized love. And I think what's amazing to me is where I got the courage to do it. And there's only one explanation, which was my sense of passion. I wanted the love of those women, and I would do anything. I would have put myself in any place to be able to feel that one.
Could we change take? Okay, interesting. Okay, yeah, Michelle's great. I wish we could just do an hour with you. Mm-hmm. Really, we could just follow you around for days. It's the archive and...
The archives and...
The Mabel and...
I feel I've already gotten more attention in my life than... that's why I keep giving
you mystery. Have you done this all before?
Not this way, but I mean, coming...
What did Amber do with you?
It here. Yeah, she did. She followed me, actually, to Abingdon School. We went on location, and we went to the old Sea Colony.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I think, well, maybe I'll put this on tape. It's very hard for you to imagine being, coming, you know, from a world which you really felt criminal to this.
Well, that's good.
You know, but yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't have wanted to come out in the 70s, just like women in the 70s. I wouldn't have wanted to come out when you did. I wouldn't have wanted to come out to a cleaned up lesbian world. Because there are too many important messages that are lost. One is always the danger of co-option by respectability.
And your guard down.
Yeah. But also alliances with other fringe people. It's one of my, why I'm controversial, because I speak about, for instance, transvestites. I speak about passing women. And lesbian feminists have a whole take that I think is one of privilege in some ways. That's a pretty, I mean, I should have a camera. That's a beautiful stuff.
We'll be ready in about a minute.
It's okay, Les.
All right, stand by.
Okay.
Continue on close up here. Should I vary this?
Yeah, you can vary.
Start the cassette rolling. Oh, give it another site, please.
You know, just Rob, it's a difference between being a queer and being a lesbian feminist. They're not really the same things. I mean, the consciousness is not the same thing.
Talk about your life now, you know, where you live and who you live with and what's your daily life like, and are you involved in a relationship? If you just come out of one, are you going into another?
Yes. First, I'm 48 years old now. I'm a different woman from that young girl in 1958, though I carry her with me all the time, and all the women that I've lost, the women who didn't, were unlucky enough to live into the period of post-Stonewall, which is our name for the gay rebellion, and into the wonderful gift of feminism, and I teach, and it's wonderful to be able to be lesbian where I teach, because I teach students who all come from colonized paths. They're students from all over the world, and so I can relate. In fact, I have much to give, much gratitude to them, because I've been reading literature of colonized peoples, and the connection to being queer and being colonized is very close. But I was in a relationship for 11 years with Deborah Adel, who should be in this room. She is in this room all over. She's a co-founder. Without her, the archives never would have been started. She's really the first lover I had, or the first person who told me I wasn't a freak. And she came out in feminism, so it was a cross-historical relationship. And then we separated with great love and caring, and she just lives 5 blocks away, and she's here 3 times a week to work with the archive and all of that. I am a woman who enjoys sexual activity, so I've had many lovers, and I think that's really important in our discussion about lesbian history, that sex really is at the center of our history, which is what makes us hard to take in many ways. I am now involved in a relationship that is challenging, and with a woman who works in city government, Lee Hudson, and who's trying in a different way to change the life for gay and lesbian people in the city. We have long political discussions all the time. I feel my life is integrated in a very real way. There's no one part, and living with the archives, of course, we do have to be a little crazy to do. As I said, there are over 1,000 people that come in and out of this house. But there's really no part of my life that doesn't fit in with a concept of liberation in some sense. So, and I get as much back from that as women I've met from all over the world and things. But I must say, I never would have thought when I entered that bar with its red light to warn us that the police were coming to make us sit down so we couldn't be dancing together, that this, all of this would be happening. And there's a part of me that's very joyous. There's a part of me that's always commemorating a past. But another part of me feels that all of that can come back in any moment. All that societal control and anger and fear of us, if it isn't back already, can come back. And I mean towards lesbians at any moment. So it's not just nostalgia keeping alive those memories. It's survival techniques.
Yeah. Also talk about Mabel and that you live with her and who she is and you work with her and you're writing a book about her.
Okay. Mabel Hampton and I first met when I was 10 years old. She was taking care of me, and she and my mother became sort of buddies, and that included, she took having their breakfast together. My mother would meet Mabel on her way to work, and then my mother and Mabel became racetrack buddies, and through the years, it was Mabel to whom my mother knew I was gay. It was Mabel who comforted her. Some things I want to say, if I can just go back. When my mother started to suspect that I was a queer, we're talking in the 50s, and she was surrounded by all the medical concept that we were biological freaks. I mean, those were the years when they were measuring the clitorises and vaginas of lesbian women to prove we were biologically different. So I remember my mother suspecting I was queer because she saw me on the bus dressed as a young boy, she thought. Went to a doctor and said, I think my daughter is a lesbian. And he said to her, don't say that. That's like saying she has cancer. And then when I was brought to a doctor, he said, no, you're right. Joan has a hormonal imbalance. It was the language because I had facial hair. And that was taken as proof that I was a biological freak. So I had to leave home because my mother gave me an ultimatum at one point, which was to go to a doctor or to leave home. And I chose to leave home, just like she did, because I knew I wasn't a freak. But anyway, so Mabel and Lillian were the first lesbians I knew, and in a real way, Mabel was my role model. And Lillian died in 1978, and Mabel now is living with me because she's lived in the South Bronx, in the same place, for 30 or 40 years, but she can no longer walk up the steps. It's a 6-foot walk up. And so now she has a room here, and it's good. It gives me a chance to care for her, this woman who has been so caring to me. She is what the archive is about. People always say, well, who's Mabel Hampton? She's not famous. Well, Mabel Hampton is a symbol and a real expression of our dignity, of our self-reliance, of how we take on a whole society and change it around. So she's about as famous as we feel a lesbian can get.
Yeah, your work with her, you're working on a book about her.
One of the projects I have, and if I could do this work full-time, if I could live off it, I would. But I feel Mabel's story is so important, and particularly to everybody, but also communities of black lesbian women who, in any racist society, a black woman has to fight invisibility, black lesbians have to fight anymore. It's crucial that her story be there for them. So I'm doing, over the years we've known each other, we've done tapes, and those tapes are going to be turned into a book of hers. I'm also working on a play about the Marge McDonald experience of her diaries being burned. It's going to be called Item the Fifth, which was the item in the will which she came out as a lesbian. I'm working on a collection of lesbian short stories. Again, all of this is done, as many lesbian cultural workers do, without pay. This is done because we know what we need to survive, and it's a commitment to our people to sort of make that a communal struggle.
Okay. Do you want to talk more about Lee, or do you think you said enough?
It's a new relationship. And,
I know.
I'd like to talk a little bit about her courage. I mean, I don't know if you want to use it, but I've been a grassroots activist for a long time, and I have one sense of what that takes. I think through watching Lee try to both be loyal to her community and protect it as she does, and also work with the mayor, I've come to understand another kind of courage, and I've seen her be misunderstood by both sides. And it's a lonely job that she has. I get adulation. I mean, it's easy. But what Lee's doing is not easy. And I really come to respect another way of trying to change things. I think together we make a wonderful combination.
Pretty electric.
Yeah.
Speak about the exhibit downtown and how, in fact, it couldn't be possible without archives like this.
Yeah, and also some things that are related. One of the things Lee has done, or helped to do, with a group of dedicated gay people, a small group, is for the first time, I think, in the history of any American city, put on display a history of the gay and lesbian community in New York City from World War II to the present, in a place where there's a constant flow of straight people and gay people, but closeted gay people all the time. And Lee said, she was asked, who did you do this show for? And she said, for the closeted gay person who never thought they would see their history in such a place. Now, because of the controversy, I just have to say, this is a special time for our people because of AIDS. It's a time of rage and of sorrow, which I deeply share. That in the beginning, because AIDS was seen as a gay disease, there wasn't enough funding given, and there still isn't. That there wasn't enough attention paid means, really, that thousands of gay men are dying, and now all peoples who have it, that shouldn't die. And so there's a group called ACT UP, which is a very important group. It says to all the government officials, we're going to be gadflies. We are going to be constantly agitating for more spending for AIDS. And this is important because when the exhibit opened up, there was a demonstration. And there I was, philosophically a supporter of ACT UP, and my lover was standing in front being screamed at. I'd never been in that situation before. But I understand. The exhibit is about history, and this was historical. It had to happen. And I... the exhibit is revolutionary. It could be even more so if one didn't have to worry about what the police would say about it, what the mayor would say about it. Because, for instance, there's a homophobia case, right? Well, something that should be in that homophobia case that isn't is a police billy club. Because it isn't just the knives of individual faggot-haters that were turned against us. The police themselves were a force of oppression against us. So there's a constant, you know, battle here to sort of radicalize things, but also just to make them available. It's a very important time, this whole month, for gay people in the city. But one, and I just want to make.
How else is it important?
One second. Okay. We need to change the audio for a second.
Okay.
This one. Now, Lee may never speak to me again for that. No, she will. She will.
Said,
she
like
will.
The way you tied her into it. This
morning. And what that night I will never forget.
You're going, Kate.
I have people who talk to me because I see her. I mean, vice versa. The people who talk to her because she sees me. So.
The importance of our times, especially for lesbians.
Well, yeah, see, I don't really feel strongly about the AIDS message, and it's important for lesbians, too. Because the backlash that's coming out because of AIDS affects, it'll affect every lesbian custody case, it'll affect, you know, I really don't want this to be a time of separating out lesbians from gay men, in a certain way. I know what we're doing, but not in terms of the oppression and not in terms of the... First of all, more and more women are going to be victims of AIDS. And while we have a different history, we also stand together in terms of times of homophobia. And this is a time for unity. Every gay man that dies takes a part of my world with him. Every queer... that someone says they deserve it because of what they do. I'm part of that, too. Why I think it's important for lesbians, I think every time we become more visible, and we are, there is also then an increased reaction to us. And the feminist movement has been a wonderful place for lesbians to be active in without necessarily having to be out as lesbians. But I think as more and more lesbians do come out, and I think that is happening. I think in some what's happening with AIDS is that gay men in some ways are getting more conservative. Lesbians are becoming more radical, more sexually expressive, taking up more public space. That along with exposure comes comes a backlash. So I think lesbians are going to be, once again, a targeted population, and we'll see it legally, we'll see it in child custody battles, we'll see it in sports, we'll see it in politics in many ways.
Yeah, why talk about lesbians? When we were thinking, putting this program together, people said, oh, Christ, I mean, why just do it about lesbians? It's such a narrow thing. I mean, these issues are the same. Why don't you include men? Why does there need to be a space just for lesbians? I mean, why talk about them as apart from...
Why?
Lesbians have, for a long time, been the invisible queer, if I put it, or the invisible minority within a minority, or the invisible population within the larger gay population or women's population. I think lesbians are stigmatized because, doubly, because women are devalued in a way. And if you don't, I mean, gay men seem, in some sense, to carry the validation of men, even though they invert it in some way. But it is absolutely essential that lesbians are seen for themselves in the strength of their own culture, because they do bring together the two realities of being a lesbian and being a woman. And they share both in those oppressions and in those creative forces. Lesbians are mothers, gay men are not. I mean, it's an obvious. But that, again, that gives us a whole different history in some way. It gives us a whole different relation to the state in some way. Lesbians are sexual